The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Good morning. This is Sandy Cassesi. I am the president and CEO of Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. As usual, it's just my absolute pleasure to be here with you today. I want to do a little commercial, if I can, just briefly. As you know, Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties is a not-for-profit entity. And as such, I'm sad to report that actually our reimbursement does not make up for our expenses. And so on any given year, we have to raise about $1 million, which sounds incredibly daunting. And it is. One of the ways that we do that is through a fundraiser that we hold every year. It's our annual gala. And this year it is on Saturday, April 20th, and it's at the West Hills Country Club in Middletown. So for their years of service, commitment, dedication to the community, we have honorees this year that I'm incredibly proud of. We will be honoring Dr. Susan Jensen and Horizon Family Medical Group, and also Mr. Michael Gilfeather and Orange Bank and Trust Companies. This is a very anticipated event, and I hope if you are listening that you will consider purchasing a sponsorship or a ticket or make a donation to us. And you can do that very easily by going to our website, hospiceoforange.com. So let me start today by telling you that March is National Social Work Month. So every March, we take time to recognize the dedication and the empathy that social workers across the country deliver while providing services to children and adults in need. This recognition of National Social Work Month was first organized way back in 1963, and it was done by the National Association of Social Workers as a way to encourage public support for the profession. Then in 1964, a joint resolution of Congress was passed and was proclaimed by President Ronald Reagan that March became National Professional Social Work Month. So there is so much that social workers do for so many. And today we will be talking once again with Kim Warner, my colleague, who is Director of Social Work and Bereavement Services at Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties, about the important role in hospice care and how her team of 15 providers is a voice for our vulnerable patients and their families. And she'll talk about how they can connect the families and patients with a myriad of resources to help them through the difficult time called end-of-life care. So, Kim, you're on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for asking me.
I am so proud of you, and I'm so proud of your profession and the people that you lead at Hospice of Orange and Sullivan County. So I just want to give you a tip of the hat this morning and say thank you. I personally benefit so greatly from your wisdom and your advice, and I admire the work that you do in our community. And you're a humble person, and I know you are always the first one to say it's a team effort, but I really do want to recognize you personally, because all good teams need a good team leader, and you do that effortlessly. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you so much.
I knew you were going to do the humble reply. So let's get into the nitty-gritty a little bit this morning. So I think that, you know, the social work profession is largely misunderstood. If you think about, you know, television programs or movies that you've seen, very often it's the image of the government worker who's there to take the child away from the home. What a silly, silly stereotype. You are among the most educated group of professionals. And so let's talk about the skills of a social worker. What type of education do social workers receive? And then tell me about yours.
Well, we are expected to go through a bachelor's level and then a master's level of skilled training. Social workers can then branch off in concentrations throughout the nation and assist people right in their homes, assist people in agencies, assist the government in policy writing. And so it is a degree of diversity, And so the social worker you may have met yesterday is not the social worker you will have met in hospice. So we often have to dispel the myths that we are not there to be an adult protective services employee or a child protective services employee. A hospice social worker is expected to coordinate and help a family through a trial.
So where did you go to school?
I'm a graduate of Fordham University and have been a part of the hospice field for 19 years.
So in your role with Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties, I have seen firsthand the work that you do with up-and-coming social workers, particularly those who are looking to do clinical work. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
We do have contracts with several community colleges and universities. We assist with a site for Fordham University, Albany University, and Adelphi University. All will seek our sites for training new interns into the community. And it is a pleasure to continue to help these new social workers wanting to help and build in our legacy of caring for others.
So, Kim, I read recently that social work is one of the fastest growing careers in the country. We have been very fortunate at Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties that we've been able to attract what I consider to be some of the most talented group of individuals. And, you know, again, I'm really proud of that because the work that they do, the work that you do, advocates for those in need, works to enhance quality of life, helps to, you know, people with self-determination. And I think that's something, you know, that we need to underscore. And of course, you are all, as part of our interdisciplinary team, an advocate for each individual's rights. And for that, again, I have to say thank you.
You're welcome. And it's built into the social work ethics of what we're taught in the academic world and then how we apply it in our workforce.
So, you know, every profession has some core skills that they need to acquire and to promote as part of their job. And in the case of the hospice social worker, there are definitely some interesting core skills. Let's have a conversation about that.
I think it begins with compassion. A social worker of hospice needs to be a keen listener to really understand what's important to our patient and our family, how to advocate for that. The trial of getting a diagnosis of terminal illness is really quite a blow. There are emotions that go high. There are emotions that go low. Different people in the family react differently. Our job as a social worker is to help them navigate through that time.
So one of the things that I think I recognize in all of the social workers who work for our agency is really that sensitivity and non-judgmental approach. And that really resonates with me. As you know, I've said before, I am a registered nurse. I have an advanced degree in nursing. And I think if I look back to the early days of my professional growth, being a non-judgmental advocate for patients really is at the core of nursing as well. And so we work together in hospice as an interdisciplinary team, which is very different than a multidisciplinary team. Can you educate our listeners on that a bit?
The goal of an interdisciplinary team is to work among each other, alongside each other, to join into one plan of care where we're quite holistic in looking at the full realm of a person. You and I, Sandy, have a physical body, we have a spiritual body, we have a emotions running, we have our intellect, and all of that is one person. And so an interdisciplinary team tries to really address and support and encourage all aspects of a person.
So the members of the interdisciplinary team include the physician, and in our case, we are fortunate to have two medical directors who are physicians who are really patient advocates. Of course, the nursing side, the social work side, spiritual care, and our volunteers. And if there's one thing that I have learned in the 6 years that I have been with our incredible company, Hospice of Orange and Sullivan, is that no one person sort of takes precedence over the other in the interdisciplinary team. In fact, the conversations that happen, I think everybody brings their level of expertise to the table, and we're all learning from each other. And that's something I have to say that I enjoy incredibly, because the day that I stop learning is the day that I probably should not be doing this job anymore. Do you agree?
I do. I want to add the top person of the team.
The patient.
Is the patient.
You know what? Thank you.
And it's the patient who says, this is what I want. This is what's important to me. This is how I need help. And it is us who listen and let them control what's important to them.
So you talked about, you know, the physical side of things, the emotional side, the spiritual side. What I've seen from conversations that we've had with patients, most people say that they would like to die in their own home. They would like to have a pain-free experience, and they want to know that their life, had some value, had some meaning. How do you approach that as a social worker? Like, what are your basic responsibilities?
Well, we want to help a person feel at peace and be able to die feeling like their life is complete and that they have had all the conversations that are important to them with the people that are important to them. And so we will encourage family gatherings. We will assist with conversations. We will help with decision making. We will work towards reconciliation if that's desired. We will help facilitate a morphing of hope as hope changes. No one ever loses hope. It's a matter of changing it from what we hoped for 2 years ago, what we hoped for 2 months ago, and what we hope for now.
So interesting. I have a quote that I use often, and it's that hope doesn't abandon you. You abandon hope. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. And Kim, when we get back, I'd like to talk about a case study.
Hospice of Orange and Sullivan provides a comfort, compassion, and support to help improve the quality of care for those at the end of life. And you can be one of the specially trained volunteers or professionals that makes a difference with those in hospice care and their families. Volunteers are an essential part of the hospice team, filling roles that range from direct contact with patients to providing clerical and fundraising support for the organization. As a hospice volunteer, you'll work alongside the organization's professional, clinical, and administrative staff. Our hospice volunteers describe their work as gratifying, intellectually stimulating, and emotionally meaningful. The hospice staff knows well that their volunteers are essential in bringing quality of life to hospice patients, as well as for the patient's family and friends. Hospice appreciates, respects, and admires those who volunteer to help care for their patients during their greatest time of need. If you've always wanted to make a difference, here is your chance. For more information, visit hospiceoforange.com.
Elevate your senses to the sights, sounds, and struggles taking place on the racetrack.
Austin Dillon leads the pack. No one ever thought he would contend for the win. He's going to win the Daytona 500.
The power of radio to the imagination of the listener. Tune in to the Motor Racing Network.
WTVQ. Hi, it's Sandy Cassese, President and CEO of Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties, and I am here with my colleague, Kim Warner, and we've been discussing the role of social work in the hospice setting. And the reason why we are highlighting this month is Social Worker Month. We want to praise our colleagues, thank them for their service, and hopefully enlighten people about the incredibly complicated and complex work that they do every single day. So, Kim, welcome back. I'm hoping that we can give our listeners a better understanding of just how complex your work and the work of your team actually is. And in our environment, we often use case studies, personal stories, to talk about how we do our work and what the outcome is. So I'm hoping you can share a story with the listeners now.
I'd be happy to. And thank you for the opportunity, because our work is very pliable, and it is a way of helping others, and every person is different. So let me tell you about fictitious name named Sue. Sue is a fiercely independent woman who lived in Sullivan County, and over a year and a half ago, she asked for hospice to help her.
She asked personally?
She personally decided that it was hospice care she wanted to assist her. She was becoming more homebound with her lung disease and wanted our home care team to come in. So the social worker goes in and greets her and learns about what's important to her, her top priorities, what culture she is, so that our team can join her in her culture versus have any other imposition to her. We learn what she wants from us. And for quite a while, over a year, the first home care social worker helping Sue was very much a listener, a validator, wanting to help her feel like she still had power over her decision making, wanted to help her communicate with the organizations that were providing meals to her, that were providing funding to her. She helped Sue navigate losing some independence and who was going to care for her in the home and how she was going to communicate to that nephew and her sister so that that would go according to her comfort in her own home. It was that pretty stable. We had a spiritual care chaplain helping us with all the changes of having lived a very independent life and now becoming more and more dependent. At about January of this year, Sue had always thought that when she could no longer get out of bed, that she would move to the Kaplan Building. And so another social worker helped her come to Kaplan.
Can you talk about what Kaplan is real quickly? Because I'm not sure everyone will know what you're talking about.
Surely. Kaplan is a residential building that hosts people who need additional support. And so Sue decided she didn't want her family to be her primary caregiver. She wanted a medical team so that her family could continue to visit her and support her as a family member rather than invade in her privacy of primary care.
Boy, I have to say, I absolutely can identify with that. I have had this conversation with my family over and over again. I too am, and I consider myself to be very independent and moreover, incredibly private. And so when the time comes where I'm facing end of life, I want to be sure that I protect my own privacy and that my wishes are honored. And so, Sue, wherever you are, I am going to channel this energy. So, Kim, keep going. This is so interesting.
So Sue came to the Kaplan Building, and she, at this point, it has become bedridden, meaning she cannot get out of bed independently. She requires two people to do that. She is in a weakened state. This social worker here at the Kaplan Family Support Building is doing a lot of grief counseling with her about her losses, helping her decide who she feels she needs to see and talk to as she declines. And then the mother is living closer here. So the mother is now getting support from our third social worker about what it's like to go through having your daughter decline. The mother is 80 years old, and it's very, very hard for her. She's already had another death in the family, so it is what we call complicated grief. So the mother is getting her own counseling, and just of recent, a fourth social worker got involved.
Wow.
The patient is now, Sue, is becoming delusional and making statements that are untrue, that are very distressful to her. So crisis intervention has occurred in trying to help the care team manage a very upset woman, validating that her worries make her feel uncomfortable and scared, providing assurance that we are right there for her no matter how confused she is, counseling the mother how difficult it is to watch your child be this confused. And our work is not done. We have a lot more grief counseling to do. We have an extended family to reach out to, and we walk beside Sue as long as she needs us.
I am trying to wrap my head around all of this because I think it is emblematic of the situation of so many people that we care for. And, you know, there are just a number of skills that kind of happen sometimes sequentially, I think, by the social workers and sometimes organically. And if you'll bear with me for a second, Kim, I just want to point them out for the listener. So the very first thing that you mentioned is that a social worker went out to evaluate, and I think that's an important part of the process. Social workers then begin the art and the science of facilitation. You gave this family, this patient, encouragement and reassurement, and you became the advocate for this family. And how did you do that? You did it through education. You did it through counseling. You did it through all of the skills that a social worker has to bring to bear in order to make sure that you're doing the work that really is on behalf of that patient and her family. I think you said it best when you said that you're walking beside her. And, you know, I, again, am in awe of how complicated some of these cases can be and how much reassurance you give to this very vulnerable person and her family to make sure that whatever we can do, we're doing to help a peaceful passing. And for that, I thank you.
You are right. Trust is one of the foundations that we start with. The whole clinical team, as we greet Sue, explain what our services can do for her, what we can't do for her. These are scary times for folks. They've never done this before. And to have some professionals beside them that say, you know, you're doing good, keep it up, this will help, maybe this will be more difficult, how would you like to handle the next thing, is really a nice way to escort beside someone who is really vulnerable and scared.
Sounds like you're working on a lot of coping mechanisms with her and with the family. And again, for that, I am so grateful. So, Kim, I want to switch gears a tiny bit. We only have a few minutes left this morning, almost this afternoon. And something incredibly important in our area is happening on March 29th. And I would like you to talk about the Welcome Home Veterans event that we have planned.
Oh, yes. The veteran program of our agency has embraced the Welcome Home Vietnam Veteran Day on March 29th. It is a national holiday. Our agency supports the veterans in our community with great vigor. And so we host a event to be able to say to all of the Vietnam vets their loved ones that come to this event to remember those who died in that war, to encourage those who have survived that war, and to provide a space and time to really say we value you.
So I was at the event last year, and I have to say, I'm still thinking about it. The amount of gratitude that was in that room was so palpable. I don't know how to describe it other than to say that it felt respectful. And it felt like we were doing incredibly important work, acknowledging, you know, what these service members have done for our country. It's called the Forgotten War for a reason, right? People did not get a great welcome home, and we're doing what we can to change that. Can you just talk about the venue, where it's going to be, how people can get involved?
Oh, well, it's at a local yacht club. On our website is the advertisement for it. Anyone is welcome to come. We have some important guests arriving and have an organized program set up. And we want everyone to feel welcome.
So the event is free to attend. We're covering the costs for all of that, along with some other community organizations and individuals. So if you're listening and this sounds like something you'd like to get involved with, you can make a donation to help us offset the cost of the event, or you can volunteer as a veteran yourself. Or if you are a Vietnam veteran, we really would like to see you there. I know that we've in past years had a great deal of support from elected officials. Last year, the county executive, Steve Newhouse, was an impromptu guest, and he gave, I think, a riveting speech about the importance of the work that we do. So, Kim, you know, again, you are the leader of the work that we do with veterans organizations. What else would you like to know our listeners? Or what else would you like our listeners to know about the work that we do? Briefly, we have about 1 minute left.
Well, I want them to know that if you're interested in supporting the veterans with us, please explore becoming a veteran volunteer. We would like to grow that pocket of people who are willing to sit at bedside, veterans sitting beside veterans, to provide a level of support that you and I can't do, Sandy, because we didn't go into the military. So there's a camaraderie I respect, and we really want our patients to get what they need.
Thank you. Go to hospiceoforange.com for more information, and have a great day.